Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Excuse me.
Wow, is that allergies?
A little froggy.
Well, hello.
A little froggy from...
From what?
He was a very underestimated member of the Rascals.
You mean Mike Quigley?
Our
my
gang.
Congressman?
Yeah, exactly.
Froggy. Do you have allergies or...
I don't know, something.
Hay fever?
A second accuser. Calendars from 1982. Washington Post collusion. Bob Beckel's ex-wife. Hashtag I stand with Brett. The circus continues, and the tent is growing. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36DA, turnkey.pro text line. Why don't we start with the second accuser, because you're always concerned in these cases, or somewhat expecting in these cases, a second shoe to drop, and it has. The woman's name is Deborah Ramirez, who attended Yale with Kavanaugh, and she alleges... in a piece in the New Yorker, that at a dorm party where she admittedly was intoxicated, there was a group of students, Brett Kavanaugh included, playing a game of playing pranks on one another. And the prank that Brett Kavanaugh played on her was to thrust his junk in her face. And then she pushed it away, causing her to touch it without her consent. She's now calling on the FBI to investigate Kavanaugh's role in the incident. Mm-hmm. I would think an FBI investigation would be warranted. Kavanaugh denies this happened some 35 years ago.
Yeah, her story's a little thin because the New Yorker and others reached out to other students who were at this party. They don't recall this at all. They said, well, she was drunk, we remember that, but that didn't happen. So that's where...
Here we go again.
Here we go again. He said, she said situation. And the part that doesn't sit well with me is I feel like this was a rush to print just because it's timely right now. Oh, let's get it out there without even, you know, this accuser, she sat down, Dan, for 6 days with her attorney and had memory manipulation to try and dig deep to see. She wasn't sure if it was him. And then after 6 days, they decided to go forward to the New Yorker.
Right. Here's how the New Yorker characterizes that. She was at first hesitant to speak publicly, partly because her memories contained gaps because she had been drinking at the time of the incident, the alleged incident.
1983-84 school year, by
the way. Then in her initial conversations with the New Yorker, she was reluctant to characterize Kavanaugh's role in the alleged incident with certainty. After 6 days, as you mentioned, of carefully assessing her memories and consulting with her attorney, Ramirez said she felt confident enough of her recollections to say that she remembers Kavanaugh had exposed himself at a drunken dorm party.
He's denying it, and so is the White House speaking last night or releasing a statement saying this alleged event from 35 years ago did not happen. The people who knew me then and now know that this did not happen and have said so. This is part of a smear campaign, plain and simple.
Right. And this is here. The here we go again, both in terms of the nature of the allegation and then these others who are supposed to corroborate the story who do the opposite. This continues to happen with Ms. Blase Ford. The third person that was supposed to corroborate her story is a woman named Leland Kaiser. Mm-hmm. Who is Bob Beckel's ex-wife.
I know.
I mean, this is just gets
so inside baseball.
It's incestuous. The 49-year-old Kaiser, who was a professional golfer, and Beckel, parents two teen children.
And dated Tiger Woods.
They're divorced, Kaiser and Beckel.
Kaiser and
she's married now to this guy, John Kaiser, who I guess started the golf program at Georgetown University, the women's golf program, where she was a coach. She was the golf coach. Anyway, she was supposed to corroborate Ford's story, and that's not happening. She rejected Ford's accusation. Ms. Kaiser does not know Mr. Kavanaugh, has no recollection of ever being at a party or gathering where he was present with or without Dr. Ford. That's the written testimony that was offered by her through a representative to the Senate Judiciary Committee. So you still come down to this hostage negotiation that's going on with Blasey Ford and her legal representation, even though she's now agreed to testify on Thursday. But there are still these pending demands. And now the second accuser against the backdrop of the corroborating witnesses who don't support the stories of either accuser.
And then according to Stormy Daniels' attorney, he said he has a third accuser that he's working with and that we'll know more in the coming days.
I think this is ridiculous enough without worrying about what Michael Avenatti has to say. Then now we're really getting into this kind of surreal space. The interesting thing is this is all against the backdrop what transpired this weekend of this press conference on Friday. Sort of remarkable. 87 women.
Oh, I loved it. Did you see it?
Hashtag I stand with Brett press conference. These women who have known Kavanaugh personally and professionally, some both, I mean, you know, including dating back to high school. The first woman who spoke was this woman named Sarah Fagan.
Did he go to Turnabout with her?
They knew each other from the George W. Bush administration.
Oh, good.
I first met Brett when we were both working in the early days of the Bush administration. All told, I worked closely with him for 4 years. No matter the hour or assignment, Brett was always the same. Thoughtful, detailed, and wise beyond his years. And whether you were male or female, white or black, an intern or the chief of staff, Brett was also always the same. Respectful, responsive, and available. His character was consistent. Simply put, Brett was a great colleague.
Maura Fitzgerald, known Brett Kavanaugh since high school, dated him briefly in college. She offered her testimony.
My name is Maura Fitzgerald. I've known Brett Kavanaugh since high school. I dated him briefly in college, and I've remained friends with him ever since. I want to make something clear, very, very clear. For me, this is not political. My being here has nothing to do with politics. I'm here because I felt it important to share my perspective on Brett's character and to talk about a man that I've known for over 35 years. The allegation against Brett is inconsistent with everything that I have known about him as a person. In both public and private, Brett treated me and everyone I know with respect. He has always been kind and good-natured. He has always been caring and concerned with the well-being of others. Brett was the kind of guy that you wanted to take home to meet your parents.
So can you square the circle? Can you square the circle of the guy that these 87 women on Friday are talking about at a press conference versus the guy he is alleged to be by these two accusers?
I believe Brett Kavanaugh. I think that these accusers are politically motivated. And every time over this weekend with this cat and mouse game, there was another, you know, deadline delay. She lost credibility. You know, I mean, Anita Hill, when they asked her to testify, she did. She didn't ask for one camera. She didn't ask to go second. You know, this one, I mean, to ask, well, it's too much pressure, so we just want a pool camera in there. Shut up and sit down and testify. I'm so sick of this crap because that's what this is.
There's only one radio show in Chicago talking about today's biggest stories and telling you what they really mean. That show is this one, Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. A tweet from Kevin Rooney. Kavanaugh sounds like one of those guys all the girls like because he didn't hit on them. Half of them probably assumed he was gay just to preserve their own egos. Yeah, I was like one of those guys. Well, not exactly. I was one of those guys.
You still are one of those guys.
Shoo! You go away! You leave. Shoot, get out of here.
Well, you have personal security, right, to keep the ladies
away? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right.
But Vice President Mike Pence, he was at an event on Friday night, and let us know how he felt about Kavanaugh.
But honestly, the way some Democrats have conducted themselves during this process is a disgrace and a disservice to the Senate and the American people.
And President Trump was in Missouri on Friday.
Brett Kavanaugh, fantastic man. He was born for the U.S. Supreme Court. He was born for it. And it's going to happen.
Yeah, well, the other thing that's going to happen is this is going to go, you know, full chaos this week. As you would expect, protesters are being bussed in from a number of groups. I mean, you thought the confirmation hearing was a circus. The Women's March, MoveOn.org, and others are bussing in professional protesters to prepare for to descend on D.C. this week for all of this rigmarole. Protesters, jail bail, legal fees, transportation being paid by these leftist groups, many of whom individuals and groups are being financed by George Soros, of course.
Honestly, it breaks my heart. And, of course, with the second alleged accuser coming forward now, members, Democratic members on the Senate Judiciary Committee want Kavanaugh to withdraw his nomination. We need to suspend this indefinitely, postpone the vote for 3 weeks. It's just such a sickening thing what is happening to a decent man that it really breaks my heart.
Well, he does have his summer of 1982 calendars enter into evidence. Calendars from that time period he plans to hand over to the Senate Judiciary Committee that do not show a party consistent with the description of Ms. Blase Ford, according to someone working on his confirmation that spoke to the New York Times on condition of anonymity. The calendars do not disprove the allegations, the Kavanaugh team acknowledged.
He wasn't at summer camp during that time period?
Well, I mean, it's a calendar. So, I mean, you could have attended a party. You didn't listen to your calendar. But the team argues that the calendars provide no corroboration for her account of a small gathering at a house where he allegedly, pinned her down and tried to remove her clothing, according to her allegations. Pages from June, July, and August of 1982 were examined by the New York Times. Boy, this is
why you went
to J school, right? To do a forensic examination of Brett Kavanaugh's 1982 calendars.
This is so stupid, but go on.
I just hope this just better not be one where a scantily clad Sandra Day O'Connor is the pinup girl.
All right.
Because then Kavanaugh's really getting himself in hot water.
She was the month of June. Also, too, all evidence has to be submitted by 10 a.m. Tuesday. Eastern time.
Yeah, until that deadline gets moved by Chuck Grassley and Surrender Republicans.
You know what they should do? They should say, you know what? F it. Let's just go straight today and have the vote.
Well, or...
Honestly, because there's still a possibility that this is going to fall through, that she's not going to show up on Thursday. I'm not 100% sold that she's going to be there.
Right, there's agreement.
She's not going last.
There's agreement in principle, but there are still these pending demands and how she reacts to those demands. I mean, who knows? This was like an hour-by-hour update over the weekend. Friday with this idea. Well, she couldn't do Monday because she didn't want to fly from California to D.C. She was going to have to drive.
But it's the Democrats will suck up
money. Madden?
Doesn't she have a GoFundMe page already?
Oh, yeah.
To pay for her defense? Well, I'm sure they could kick in some miles. Yeah, she met with the FBI on Saturday. That's why they couldn't decide because she was meeting with them to talk about her safety. They're dragging this on and on and on. And I'm telling you, her story is lost credibility with me.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Tickets for Freedom Summit Chicago are on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com. That's freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Taking your calls, 312-642-5600, TurnkeyDepro answer line, 646-36DA, TurnkeyDepro text line.
Hey, did you gargle glass over the weekend?
Yeah. Something.
I like it. Very raspberry.
Yeah, I sound like Kim Carnes.
Kim Carnes.
Yeah. Got a voice so husky, could pull a dog sled. Kathleen Turner in Body Heat before she...
Yes, before she what, Dan? Oof. Do tell.
Before she was unable to make a sequel to Body Heat. All right. We're trying to update the Kavanaugh circus, replete with the trained SEALs that will be coming to D.C. to bark for their supper, courtesy of George Soros. But a lot of moving parts. And, of course, senators weighing in. Mazie Hirono.
Oh, my gosh. She needs to go bye-bye.
She
just needs to spend more time with her family.
I think she was very generous to allow Jake Tapper to speak in the form of interviewing her on his State of the Union program over the weekend. Because remember, last week she said that all men in this country should just shut up and do the right thing for once.
Shut up and step up.
Yeah. Okay. And Tapper was allowed to speak for the purposes of interviewing her. And it was relevant because she's sort of previewing what the arguments are, what the arguments the left is going to advance this week are. Mazie.
Wouldn't the concern about Kavanaugh and Professor Ford be more credible if Democrats were also condemning similar charges against Democrats in their midst, including Congressman Ellison?
I've been very clear that I make no excuses for anybody who engages in this kind of behavior. And as far as Keith Ellison, these allegations need to be investigated and appropriate action taken. Meanwhile, we have, within the next week or so, we have before us a nominee that is under a cloud. There's not even a modicum of investigation. And so we are left with basically he said, she said. This happens a lot in the context of sexual assault. We know this. So, for example, when the person who's running against my sister, Heidi Heitkamp, when he says, oh, nothing happened, really? I don't think North Dakota should be electing somebody who does not think that attempted rape is a crime. But this is the context. This is the environment in which we are having this discussion. So I want to be very laser focused on the fact that this person who already has credibility issues, he will misstate the holding of a case, of cases that I'm very familiar with. He will misapply the case. And I said at his hearing, I do not want to have a person on the Supreme Court who doesn't seem to be able to apply the facts in ways that do not meet his outcome-driven agenda. At the same time, we now have this cloud. Mm-hmm. You know, we already have one person on the Supreme Court who got there under this cloud. We should not have another.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Mazie Hirono, number one. I mean, her sister?
Well, like her sister in Senate, you know, sister friend.
You know, I get what she's saying, but process that a little bit.
Yeah.
The attitude that speaks to. I mean, my sister from North Dakota, a brother.
They burn their bras together. I think that's what they do for initiation.
Please. This is a family show.
It's still smoldering.
The last thing we need to talk about is Mazie Hirono's bra. So that's number one. Number two, interesting on Keith Ellison. Hey, Keith Ellison's being investigated. Well, he's being investigated by his own party in Minnesota.
And we'll get to that later because they had a candidates forum and he defended himself. And I think you'll like what he had to say.
I saw that. And but Keith Ellison, it's investigate and wherever the facts lead. Brett Kavanaugh has already been convicted and he should withdraw.
Right. Well, the entire
membership, Democrat Senate membership of the Senate Judiciary Committee has already passed judgment on Brett Kavanaugh. I don't even know why they're so interested in either one of them testifying. They've already made up their minds.
Well, she refuses to say if Kavanaugh has presumption of innocence because she said women need to be believed. Listen to this.
Doesn't Kavanaugh have the same presumption of innocence as anyone else in America?
I put his denial in the context of everything that I know about him in terms of how he approaches his cases. As I said, his credibility is already very questionable in my mind and in the minds of a lot of my fellow Judiciary Committee members, the Democrats. So he comes and, you know, when I say that he's very outcome driven, he has an ideological agenda.
Yeah.
It's very outcome driven. And I can sit here and talk to you about some of the cases that exemplifies in my view, inability to be fair in the cases that come before. And this is a person that is going to be sitting on our Supreme Court making decisions that will impact women's reproductive choice. He very much is against women's reproductive choice.
So there you go. There it is. There's the tell. The translation, all of the bluster from Mazie Hirono and so many others, Roe v. Wade. That's all this is about.
Right.
And Brett Kavanaugh changes the balance of the court on that issue and a host of other issues that regard bad judicial decisions, bad law. But anyway, that's what this is about. It's about Roe v. Wade, plain and simple. And so where does Mazie Hirono and her...
sister friends?
Yeah. Where do they want to take it this week? She gave a little indication.
Oh, good.
I would be wanting to hear what kind of environment it was in high school. Apparently, there was a lot of drinking and partying going on. This is why we need an investigation.
Right.
We need an independent investigation that lays all of that out for us so that there's at least some chance of some outside entity like the FBI.
Mm-hmm. Independent investigation into Georgetown Prep to see what was going on there in high school.
Apparently, 36 years ago.
Apparently there was some drinking and partying. I don't know if that's unique to Georgetown Prep. But
Is it unique to any high school in the country?
But let me ask this question to Mazie then. And to you. Oh, if you want to know what the environment was like in high school and how Brett Kavanaugh fit into that environment. I mean, I don't want to get into... piercing like rape shield law protocols here, but do you want to understand how Christine Blasey Ford fit into that environment too? Because I mean, if we're just going to rumor monger and make unsubstantiated allegations, I have friends who have friends who went to Georgetown Prep around that time.
Yeah,
I've heard things about Christine Blasey Ford. Now I've heard what her alleged nickname was.
Well, what was it?
I'm not going to repeat it.
Just
I'm a gentleman.
On. Stand by.
This is
play
why
some elevator music,
this,
please.
This is why we have breaks.
Well, no, I need
tell
to
you,
know now.
No, no.
That's so rude.
No.
Such a fuddy duddy. Why are you going to be so nerdy like? Just tell me.
I'm a gentleman.
So she got around. Well, no, listen to me. That sounds awesome.
I mean, that's
but, I mean,
just...
it was high school. People do stupid things, both men and women.
I'll tell you what.
Girls and young
here's,
men.
Here's what I'll do.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what I understand her nickname to be if you tell us what happened, what you did when you were 15 years old in high school.
Heck.
That's a trade.
No, not going to happen. Not going to happen. But my story can be corroborated.
Oh, really?
The witnesses are still alive, except for one's in jail.
Mark Judge? Should we subpoena Mark Judge about what you did in high school?
No.
How about,
it was one bad day.
How about Leland Kaiser?
Oh, Bob Beckel's ex-wife?
Leland Kaiser Sose.
Yeah. Because none of them could corroborate her story.
How about PJ, Patrick Smith, or whatever his name was?
Yeah, whatever. What's his scoop?
Same thing.
Same thing?
Just another guy who's refuting what Christine Blasey Ford is alleging, or at least doesn't have any recollection to substantiate her claim. But now you've got this problem of this second accuser. And, of course, in addition to wanting to understand... how much of a wild and crazy guy Brett Kavanaugh was in high school, you've got Senate Democrats who are going to seize on Deborah Ramirez, the second accuser, as recounted in The New Yorker, and say, well, now. And it'll be interesting to see.
They're not going to subpoena her to testify, are they?
Well, I don't know that they need to, but it's not going to be it's going to be interesting to see how stout of heart Republicans are. What happens now that there's a second accuser? What happens with Jeff Flake? What happens with Susan Collins?
Oh.
What happens with Lisa Murkowski, particularly Flake? What happens with Chuck Grassley, who's sort of been operating from the wrong premise that what's really the interest here is some presentation of fair play. The left has no interest in fair play. They have no interest in due process. They have no interest in the facts. They have no interest in corroboration. They have an interest in doing two things. One, obviously spiking the Kavanaugh nomination. I don't even think when this started they believed that was possible.
Right.
But maybe it is now. I think this is all, hey, we know he's going to get confirmed. We don't have the votes. But what we can do is turn this into – what we've turned it into, the circus, and whip up our base. And because that's what the horde requires. It requires more frenzy, not more reflection. This is about midterm turnout for them, ultimately. If they were able to kill the Kavanaugh nomination, that would be gravy.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper. Hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
Dan and Amy and...
Come on, tell everybody your nickname.
No, I'm not telling her. We're discussing how lunchroom gossip has consumed a confirmation hearing for the Supreme Court of the United States. Let's get a couple calls in. Ken in Lombard, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Morning, Amy, Dan. Hey, just this rumor that you have of who it, what the nickname is. I know you can't say it, but is there some place you can, like, let's say Facebook or YouTube or something?
Well, it starts with.
You don't have to tell me, Dan.
All right, her last name was Blazy.
Stop.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
Giving them a little.
Thanks for the call, Ken.
Little creative room there.
Yeah, that's come on. My point was not to encourage speculation. My point is to say, you want to do this, Maisie Hirono, the environment at Georgetown Prep with partying and whatnot and, you know, kissing behind the bleachers, then is everybody fair game for reckless gossip and silliness? High school silliness.
I know, but they keep calling it alleged sexual assault. No, it's not. It's not that. Just say sexual misconduct or alleged sexual misconduct. I'm sick of the word assault.
Bill in the north suburbs.
Good morning. Trump should invite Feinstein and Schumer and Kavanaugh to the White House and let the idiots know that if Kavanaugh is not put on the bench while he's wearing his Terminex outfit, he's going to replace Sessions. And run all the cockroaches out of
the cockroaches. All right. Thanks for the call, Bill. Appreciate it. Greg in Schaumburg.
Hey, Dan, I'll be back to you in a second with a question. But first of all, to Amy. Amy, you're our all-American, albeit Swedish, woman. And if your indignation is any indication of the status of American women this morning, we are so proud of you. Thank you very much. Dan, is there no legal or legislative protection for any of our political candidates if they stick their neck out and decide to serve us?
Well, yeah. I mean, thanks for the call, Greg. I mean, look, the standard for, say, a defamation claim is very high for a public figure. But you can't accuse somebody of a felony without substantiation. So, for example, so if you knowingly and willfully lie about somebody such that it damages their reputation, even a public figure, like, for example, accusing them of committing a felony they haven't committed, and you know it's not true, then there's potential recourse. So, you know, I mean, that, would it go there? I don't know. I mean, if I was Kavanaugh, I'd be certainly weighing my options as I'm chomping at the bit to testify, which is where he seems to be right now.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and amidst all of the Kavanaugh swirl, this story that broke on Friday, New York Times report that Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, remember, he's the guy overseeing, quote unquote, overseeing the Mueller special counsel investigation, that Rosenstein joked? I don't know. Talked about secretly recording President Trump for the purposes of getting information that would allow, well, him and the political leadership of the country to invoke the Constitution's 25th Amendment and remove him from office, suggesting that he does not have the capacity to be president of the United States.
Yeah, it was either having Mueller or somebody in Trump's cabinet secretly record him. And President Trump didn't take to it too kindly.
They're all gone. They're all gone. They're all gone. But there's a lingering stench, and we're going to get rid of that, too.
Yeah, they're all gone. He's talking about the bad actors at FBI and the leadership. This was at a rally in Missouri. The lingering stench, he may or may not be talking about Rosenstein, maybe after the story. Yes, so the New York Times reports that he wanted to do this, Rosenstein. Then there's a report that no, it was a joke, according to Justice Department officials requesting anonymity who spoke to NBC News. He's kidding around because if you know Rod Rosenstein, you know he is a cut-up. Guy is a riot.
I mean, was he at a party or something and said, hey, wouldn't it be funny if one of us wore a wire and got the president? If he's acting erratic, then we can invoke the 25th Amendment.
Lisa Page, she the paramour of one disgraced former FBI agent, Peter Strzok.
According to
Daily Beast, two sources told the Daily Beast that FBI lawyer Lisa Page was present for Rosenstein's comments on secret recordings and did not believe he was joking or being sarcastic.
Oh.
So what are we to believe? By the way, of course, Rosenstein has denied the New York Times report saying it is factually inaccurate. What are we to believe on this matter? And how much more can our confidence be shaken with respect to the chief law enforcement agencies of this country, FBI and DOJ? For more on this, we're pleased to be joined again by our friend Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, contributing editor at National Review, nationalreview.com. Andy has written about this latest controversy. Andy, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
It's my pleasure.
So the question I posed was Rod Rosenstein, funny man or weasel? Watch Donnie Brasco too many times. So what do we have here with Rosenstein?
Well, I've never thought cut up and weasel were necessarily mutually exclusive, but
sure.
Also not quite found Rod Rosenstein to be Rod Dangerfield, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Although he does get no respect.
He shouldn't. Because what happened here is you have a guy who I don't think the Trump administration vetted very carefully, but there's a reason why at a time when it was very difficult to get Trump's nominees for top executive branch officials through the Senate, that Rosenstein was confirmed by 94-6 with overwhelming Democratic Party support. And what very simply happened here is he's not the swiftest guy in town, and he miscalculated. He thought that he was going to be roundly praised and applauded for the memorandum he wrote supporting Jim Comey's being dismissed as FBI director. And what he didn't factor in was that by the time that happened, the Democrats had moved on from being angry about Hillary Clinton losing the election to Trump derangement, and Comey had made himself very useful in that effort. And for that reason, they perceived Comey firing as an opportunity to make an obstruction case against President Trump and to ratchet up their calls for special counsel. So much to Rosenstein's surprise, I believe, rather than being praised for his Comey memo, he was bitterly attacked and savaged over it. He had never in his life been anything but praised by, the denizens of the swamp. And everything he's done since then is quite understandable in the nature of trying to get himself back into the good graces of the people he so disappointed. And that's why he talked about removing Trump under the 25th Amendment. I don't think he was really serious about taking any concrete steps to do that, but I think he wanted to signal to everyone it was important to him to signal to that he was with them on the matter of Trump's fitness. It's why he talked about recording him, and it's why he appointed a special counsel without having a legal basis to do that.
Well, do you think it's possible Rosenstein leaked the story himself to the paper?
No, it looks to me like the Times has a lot of sources, and in particular, I think they're getting a lot of information from the Andy McCabe camp. It looks like a lot of this story, Amy, came out of these memoranda, that are written by top officials of the FBI, particularly McCabe. The Times is a little bit cagey about whether they've actually seen these memos or whether they're relying on the accounts of these memos from other witnesses who've seen them. But I think that's where most of the story comes from.
Is time for Rosenstein to go? The Wall Street Journal thinks no.
I think it's we're seeing in connection with Kavanaugh, right, Dan, the dynamic here that you end up having to put up with a lot of nonsense that you wouldn't otherwise put up with, because the Republicans have a very, very thin margin in the Senate. I mean, it's effectively, it's 51 to 49, but it could be that they're effectively three seats down, or, you know, at least one seat down, because you've got a faction of Republicans who seem to blow one way or the other on every important issue. So it's not like, you know, Trump can just, you know, fire this guy and bring me the next Deputy Attorney General. It's very complicated to get somebody.
Well, that's right. But I mean, here's the thing. If I was Trump, I'd go to them if there was any holdouts here with Rosenstein, just like with Brennan, with Mueller. You've seen Gowdy and Graham, you know, move significantly in Trump's direction based on the performance of Mueller and the FBI and the DOJ and Rosenstein. Say, you know, what exactly does it take? What is it that would satisfy you to say this guy has to go? He's a cancer on the Department of Justice, or he's a cancer at the FBI, and we have to cut him out. I mean, this is utter silliness. What is the point of having a Republican majority? Should we just cede the majority and get back to the minority where we can actually do stuff and we'll support the president in doing stuff that should be done? I mean, what's the point of having this fragile majority if you won't act with it?
Well, first of all, it's only a majority if it's a working majority that you can actually act with.
Well, I understand.
I'm as frustrated as you are by that. And, you know, I don't think anybody has written more about Rosenstein than I have from the beginning, including when a lot of people were of a mind to sort of, you know, let's give this poor guy a break and a chance. If it was up to me, he'd have been fired. You know, well, he wouldn't have been appointed in the first place, but he'd have been gone long ago.
Well, but that's my point.
And I think,
you know, look,
if you want to
implement a plan where Trump takes somebody who has a prayer of actually getting through, like, you know, Trump decides, I'm firing in one fell swoop Sessions and Rosenstein, and I'm appointing Lindsey Graham, who I think is, like, you know, Lindsey is somebody who I agree with on a lot of things. I disagree with a lot of things, but you have to say, no matter what you think of him, he seems to be loyal to Trump. He seems to know what he's talking about in terms of what the important issues are that come before the Judiciary Committee and are in front of the Department of Justice, and he could conceivably get confirmed. Yeah. But unless you're going to do something like that, if he takes these guys out, he's got no chance of getting another person through to run the Justice Department. And we're now talking about, you know, we're just a few weeks before the midterms. Nothing is going to happen in the way of getting these guys replaced till February or March. And even that will hinge on how the midterms turn out.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long time to endure this kind of undermining that's apparently going on. I mean, I would think you could go to the flakes of the world and say, look, you may not like me, but if you were in my position, what would you do with Rod Rosenstein? He's overseeing the special counsel investigation while he was previously actively trying to set me up. I mean, yeah. if it was President Flink, how would you react to that? How would you deal with that with respect to number two at Justice? I mean, come on.
Dan, that's how you see it, and that's how I see it, but it's not how these swamp denizens see it. They think that Mueller's great. They think that Rosenstein's great. They think that they're longtime, apolitical, nonpartisan, trustworthy bureaucrats who are just, you know, they're just doing the best they can to do their job. And, you know, if it turns out that they sick the special counsel on the president of the United States and put the governance of this country under a cloud of criminal suspicion under circumstances where there was no underlying criminal offense, well, you know, that's just the way it goes, because these are honest, trustworthy technocrats who are just trying to do the right thing by the country.
Well, that's sort of Mark Penn's piece in The Hill, too, the Rosenstein dilemma and his take on it, where he essentially says sort of what you're saying, damned if you do, damned if you don't. But he also suggests that the deep state is unraveling before our very eyes. Do you see the deep state, such as it is, and even forgetting that phraseology, just FBI and DOJ and the senior hyper-politicalized leadership of those agencies unraveling, or are they kind of circling the wagons, closing ranks, and more likely than not to survive?
Dan, you know when I'll believe that that's happening? When I see that Trump submits a budget to the Congress that says, on the line for the Department of Justice, if it says something like 4 million instead of 28 million, then billion, I should say, not million,
right.
Then I'll start believing it. You know, all this business about the personnel, we're talking about the wrong end of the equation. You know, if you decide that the Justice Department is doing more harm than good, and it gives me no joy to say this. I'm very proud of having worked in the Justice Department for a lot of my adult life, for 25 years. But if you get to the point where you think that this is an organization that, instead of enforcing the laws of the United States, is weaponizing them for political purposes, you need to strike their budget out. Forget about, you know, Rosenstein and Sessions and all the rest of this. They are capable of being weaponized because they have lavish, nearly $30 billion budgets. And if you want to get them where they live, you got to take their money away.
Well, that's a good point. He is Andy McCarthy, former chief assistant U.S. attorney in Manhattan, also now a contributing editor at Nash Review, nashreview.com. You can always get his musings on Rosenstein and Kavanaugh and the Mueller investigation and everything else swirling in the swamp. Andy, thanks as always for joining us. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. Have a great week.
You too.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
It's like a hot, steaming cup of information to start your day. It's Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Dan and Amy, rumors circulating that Jeff Flake has announced he's going to vote present on Kavanaugh, meaning they couldn't lose another Republican senator. Jeff Flake tweeting out, your sources are not correct. I will not be voting present. So he's still very much in play. And remember, after Grassley provided Monday, today, as an opportunity for Ms. Blase Ford to testify, Flake said, well, okay, she either shows up or she doesn't. If she doesn't show up, then we move on and we move to markup and move the process along. So, you know, I'm jumpy about Jeff Flake like everybody else, as well as Collins and Murkowski.
Yeah,
but don't suggest that they're off the reservation quite yet, and now this is going to Thursday.
Well, on Friday when President Trump, who was doing so well, I was so proud of him. He was measured, didn't let any of this get under his skin. But on Friday, he tweeted out, I have no doubt that if the attack on Dr. Ford was as bad as she says, charges would have been immediately filed with local law enforcement authorities by either her or her loving parents. I ask that she brings those filings forward so that we can learn date, time, and place, exclamation point. And Susan Collins, that did not sit well with her.
I was appalled by the president's tweet. We know that allegations of sexual assault are one of the most unreported crimes that exist.
Yeah, that's fine.
He didn't try to rape her. Stop saying sexual assault.
All of the pro forma statements notwithstanding, to the crux of it, her demands. For example, her demands that Brett Kavanaugh testify first so he wouldn't get a response to the allegations.
And demands of one camera. I mean, it's so ridiculous.
Here's Dershowitz on that, on the due process piece of it.
She makes the accusations in public. That is the most absurd, anti-due process, anti-American concept. You testify without having been formally accused under oath. Obviously, she has to testify. She has to be cross-examined, preferably by good lawyers who can ask probing questions. Then he has to get up and respond and be cross-examined with probing questions. And I do agree with her that they ought to bring in any possible witness, a judge or anybody else, subpoena them if they won't testify voluntarily, and let the FBI continue its background check. That's what it does. But now we have people, Rachel Maddow, some of my colleagues, saying he ought to be criminally prosecuted and go to jail. And even if he's confirmed, there ought to be a criminal investigation and he ought to be impeached.
So there's that. And then the other issue that one of the many other issues that bubbled up over the weekend, DiFi refusing to provide an unredacted copy of Blase Ford's letter to Chuck Grassley, the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee, or anybody else. Dershowitz responding to that.
There's no reason why it shouldn't be released. She's coming forward. She produced her name to the Washington Post. You can't, on the one hand, make the most serious accusation that anybody can be accused of, and on the other hand, say, no, but I have privacy. I'm going to tell you part of the truth, but not the whole truth. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, it's unacceptable, and the what's unacceptable continues to be accepted.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Do you see the left as just zealous Me Too minders? Or are they a bit selective for the purposes of their political agenda? And, of course, you have the useful contrast of the reaction to the two accusers of Brett Kavanaugh and how their claim should be treated versus the two accusers of Congressman and Deputy DNC Director, or Deputy DNC Chairman, Keith Ellison, who's the Democrat nominee for Attorney General in Minnesota, how they're reacting to Keith Ellison and those women, including, by the way, according to the women, his ex-girlfriend Karen Monahan saying she's essentially been abandoned by her party. This ratcheted up last week, the Ellison case, because there was a candidate forum for the candidates for attorney general, at which Keith Ellison addressed the charges. The allegations, I shouldn't say charges, the allegations against him.
That was a case in 2005 when she was harassing me and my staff. I got an order for protection to have her not do that anymore. The judge awarded that in 2006 when I was running for Congress. She filed a claim. It was denied by the judge for order of protection. And then we went to a hearing, and the judge said she was ordered to stop making the falsehoods against me and to not contact me at all. So this is not multiple cases. Now let's talk about the current one that we're dealing with now.
Ms. Monahan.
You know, look, we were in a long-term relationship. It ended 2 years ago, 2 days before the primary. She made these allegations. They're not true. I've said that they're not true. I've answered questions and gone on Esme Murphy and others to make these points clear. There is an ongoing investigation, which we hope will conclude.
Will that be done before the election?
I don't know. It's an independent investigation, so I don't know.
It's not an independent investigation. It's independent by your friends and fellow party members.
No, it's an independent
investigation. It's not an independent investigation.
But you know, it's a good thing that the voters will have their opportunity. But Ms. Monahan on social media says, Ms. Monahan said yesterday on social media that she offered to meet with Keith and the investigator at the same time, and you declined.
Well, because we broke up 2 years ago for a reason. I don't want to be in the relationship, and therefore I left the relationship. And so to get back in touch with her again is not something that I'm interested in doing. I've met somebody new, and I'm trying to pursue my life and move on.
I better hear that you know what, though? Bumble's working out for you there, Keith.
That's the perfect answer, though. He was very calm and, again, measured and believable. I mean, because he doesn't want to be in the same room with her because he's moved on and he doesn't want to give her any false hope.
And just the backdrop again here, the two incidents 10 years apart, the allegations, this started most recently. Karen Monahan's son posted on social media about Keith Ellison abusing his mom. She backed up her son. She said there was video that existed showing Keith Ellison abusing her, throwing her on a bed and such.
Yeah, but she didn't want to air it to get, or give it to CBS because she didn't want that out there.
And then the video doesn't exist or somehow got lost. So there is no video. There's just the allegations back and forth. She supplemented her allegations with a medical report. This happened last week. But all that medical report really was her telling a medical professional what happened to her and the medical professional transcribing what she said. So that's
right,
not
no
really corroborating.
There's no physical evidence or marks or bruises. It was just her, the emotional impact the relationship had on her, which is kind of goofy, but okay.
But I mean, do you, and by the way, one of the differences, 87 women haven't come forward to have a press conference on behalf of Keith Ellison to talk about what a wonderful guy he is and to back up that this is a man of principle and decency and kindness who respects women. That has happened for Brett Kavanaugh. that has not happened for Keith Ellison. But I mean, just in terms of the four corners of the allegations, you know, how do you process the two?
I don't think there's a double standard here. I mean, with Keith Ellison, he defended himself well, and they even asked him, hey, are there, could more accusers come forward?
Are you confident that no one else will step forward with any other allegations?
Look, you know, in this political environment, you know, I don't know what somebody might cook up, but I can tell you that there is absolutely nobody that I'm aware of who has any sort of, who's threatening or suggesting or has ever made a prior accusation.
Did you hear what he said? Cooked up something, which is happening right now with this second Kavanaugh accuser, I believe.
This is Deborah Ramirez. I mean, but the underlying, whether, I don't know if Deborah Ramirez is telling the truth or not, but I in terms of Keith Ellison's point, how would the left respond to the idea that this political environment induces people to cook up stories? So it's only with respect to Keith Ellison. It couldn't be with respect to President Trump's nominee for the Supreme Court. Very interesting statement. When Keith Ellison is the target of allegations he says are false, we are in a political environment in which people can cook up stories that are untrue because he is an easy target to, you know, take him out. Well, and the same couldn't be said of Judge Kavanaugh. I would have loved to get Keith Ellison's response to that. Now, Miss Monahan, Karen Monahan, his ex-girlfriend and accuser.
Scorned lover.
She spoke to the CBS affiliate in Minneapolis about this.
He met with me at a coffee shop closer to my place that evening before he ran for AG. The conversation went straight to, hey, you know, I noticed that you've been tweeting a lot, you know, and about, you know, abuse and the Me Too and, you know, over months talking about, you know, your own personal, you know, talking about, you know, your own same personal stuff about, you know, you. And, you know, I'm just wondering, are you going to keep tweeting about this? He goes, I don't want to have to look over my shoulder all the time wondering when you're going to tweet something and, you know, say it's me.
This is what Keith Ellison is saying to you.
Yes. At this point in time, I'm grounded and I know who I am. I have healed for a year and a half. I looked straight at him. I said, I never ruined your career. I didn't choose to do the things you did. I didn't choose for you to drag me off the bed, call me a b-, tell me you hate me. I didn't choose that.
Why speak out now?
I followed my gut, the gut that I kept trying to push down for a year and a half.
So is it okay to insinuate that women can make things up when it comes to Keith Ellison, but not anybody else? Or is it just the political persuasion of the accused that matters?
I think she's embellishing. I think she's a scorned lover. And I don't buy a word she's saying. Right. Sorry.
Bruce in Bloomingdale, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
You know, they treat our people like monsters, and we treat their monsters like people. There's no way to win at that game.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good way to put it. Very, very well said, Bruce. Mike on the north side.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. Drip, drip, drip.
Yep.
This is going to keep dripping out on everybody that Donald Trump nominates for anything from now on. And if he resigns or leaves office, they're going to do the same to anyone that Mike Pence nominates. This is their game plan. If we can't win at the ballot box, then we'll make stuff up. It's open season on white conservative males. They are perfect victims now. They're not going to defend themselves because they're not going to give credence to any of this BS, but it's okay. Everybody else is a victim. We have to make white conservative males victims too now. Dan, thank goodness you didn't become governor. This would be happening to you every day.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I mean, by the way, the left cannibalizing its own, too, which is always interesting to watch. The editor of the New York Review of Books got ash canned for publishing an op-ed by somebody who was the target of credible accusations of abusing women. I mean, I'm not defending the guy who wrote the op-ed, but the idea that allowing that individual to offer a provocative op-ed, New York Times Review of Books, about the Me Too movement to, you know, foster discussion, even visceral reaction, that's out of bounds. I mean, really? That's how you want to treat these problems and real-life predators? You want to silence discussion. I'm sorry, isn't that the whole problem with accusers not coming forward, as so say so many, that they've been silenced? So why would you want to silence anybody exactly? Let them have their say. Oftentimes, the predator, the guilty party, will indict themselves with their own words. Please see Harvey Weinstein. I mean, it's just, they're just so anti-intellectual, anti-reason, because they're filled with hate. By the way, somebody else not going to be nominated to the Supreme Court of the United States?
Ooh.
Addison Russell.
Oh.
Cub shortstop. He is not going to make the cut. So even if Clarence Thomas retires.
I don't know if he'll make it for postseason play, Dan.
Even if Clarence Thomas retires next year, don't expect Addison Russell to be nominated by Trump. Now,
his ex-wife came forward again with some more allegations.
So this has been, this is another case, been going on for a year. They get divorced. He denied the allegations a year ago. He denies them again. She provided detail that she didn't provide a year ago prior to the divorce. His wife, Melissa Reedy Russell, right?
Yeah.
The first time I was physically mistreated by my spouse, I was in shock. I couldn't wrap my head around just what just happened. Why did he get so angry? What did I do for him to want to put his hands on me? Of course, I forgave him, assumed it would never happen again. I just thought he had let his emotions get the best of him. He loves me, and he's sorry. I was deeply hurt that he could even be capable of this behavior towards me. I couldn't understand how the man I was so in love with, the father of my child, the man I married just a few months ago, could show such aggression to me. Then she goes on to detail the emotional and verbal abuse that continued throughout the marriage.
She said it was an everyday thing.
Right. And
being blamed for just about anything that went wrong, name-calling, intimidating me with personal force, manipulating me.
And so that put Tom Ricketts and Theo Epstein front and center to explain that Addison Russell has been put on leave. MLB is investigating.
Well, yeah, because they have this new domestic violence policy. So really, they had no choice. They had to hand over the information, and now he's been benched. And I hope he can get into postseason play, because when you're going through a divorce, I mean, people make allegations against their spouses for a various number of reasons, whether it's monetary or if they want support or you know, custody of the children. That's why I think there should be something, a different category if you're going through a divorce and these allegations are made. I say blood them back on the field.
Addison Russell's sister was a bit less charitable, responding to his ex-wife. You're an evil bitch, plain and simple, toying with not only others' lives, but also your own son's future. Sweetheart, you're irrelevant.
Oh, that's awesome. And they're all, she's, you know what she's also she's doing? She's messing with Cub fans and the organization. I'm sorry. It's all about winning from this point on.
Oh, yeah. No, I know. I mean, we're familiar with the Cubs and Aroldis Chapman.
Well, Aroldis Chapman was, he's gone.
Well, what do you know about Addison Russell? You don't know that this isn't true.
I'm just saying, I feel like we've seen this movie before. We did the same thing last year.
Well,
with her.
Well, okay. But well, now she's providing detail.
Evidence. Okay. If he's talking to you in an unkindly manner, leave.
Forget Addison Russell will be lucky to be in a Major League Baseball uniform again in this culture. I mean, forget the Cubs in the playoffs. I'm talking about his career could be over at 24. A guy who was supposed to be a potential MVP candidate. Well, I don't know about that, but that's how he was marketed. Chris and Aurora, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
I know I'm going backwards a little bit here, but there's something that I think that you should comment on or answer. There's like an internet like conspiracy that the reason why that they are trying to delay Kavanaugh's hearing for another week is that if they can get past this week, that his confirmation will virtually have to start over by Senate rules. Do you know anything about that, or can you remark anything about
that? Well, they're trying to get him confirmed so that he can be seated for the next Supreme Court term, which starts October 1. So that's the issue. But I mean, not that I'm familiar with. It would not have to start over. You've got a there are I'm blanking on the exact protocols, but
the reason why I brought it up,
there
is Tucker,
there's a time constraint.
Tucker Carlson did a report on this and was saying in regard that that's why that she's all of a sudden mysteriously can't fly in a plane and she needs to drive all the way there. It's because they got to drag this as far as they can to get past this one deadline, and which would be the end of this week here. And then all of a sudden, now all of a sudden, it's in a situation of where, because of the Senate rules, this his confirmation hearing was virtually over, and if there isn't a vote, then I'm assuming then you have to start over.
No, a vote doesn't have to take place this week. That's not true. I'll have to pull back. I don't remember, not being a member of the U.S. Senate, I don't remember all of the time requirements for, you know, markup and then so much time for floor debate and then the vote and how long a confirmation proceeding can take place. But the idea that a vote has to happen this week or never is not true.
What is this driving thing that she has to drive from California to D.C.? She better get in her car. I'm telling you, this confirmation, I have a feeling this hearing is not going to happen.
It's like, where's Waldo? I mean, there was a Politico piece per Chris and Aurora suggesting Monday couldn't work because she didn't want to fly from California to D.C.
Too bad, Tootsie.
Yeah, Cannonball, run it. You know,
what is your problem?
Get Burt Reynolds' Trans Am. He's not using it. Hey. Oh,
you know what? Why you got to go there?
But then there's also reports that she's already on the East Coast. So who knows? I don't know.
I don't trust. She's so squirrely and cagey. I don't like her.
Joseph in Frankfurt.
Okay. Oh, morning, Dan. Amy, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. You know, my biggest concern with this is I'm like Amy. I'm a father of two teenage boys, mm-hmm. and my bigger concern of this is that we've boiled things down to three options when a couple of teenagers go into a room. One is that they have consensual sex or something like sex. The other is rape, and the other is attempted rape. And the congresswoman, I believe it was congresswoman that you put on earlier. This is called attempted rape, and it's really kind of washing it down, don't you think?
Thanks for the call, Joseph. Mike in Crown Point.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. If I was the chairman of that committee, I would just say, listen, all of you on the Democratic side have stated your opinions that he's guilty. You obviously believe he's guilty. Let's just vote now. Why listen to testimony? It's not going to change the way you vote anyway.
Yeah, thanks for the call, Mike.
You're listening to Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
I'm Lou Dobbs.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
I don't know. Is that too celebratory, given the mood? Yeah,
things have changed since we, Justin Kosick, our technical producer, sang that little ditty.
It was fun for a while.
Things were going smoothly, and then we had the Me Too moment hits the Senate Judiciary Committee, and that's going to happen on Thursday, allegedly. It's scheduled for Thursday.
There's calls for postponement, right, as we heard at the top of the hour. Carol Roth, she's a friend of the show, fills in from time to time and whatnot. Entrepreneur, she's a financial services professional.
Smart cookie. Yes.
Yeah, she tweeted over the weekend, I like this. There are great men and crappy men. Also, there are great women and crappy women. Being awful is not correlated to your gender. Thank you for coming to my TED Talk. Very succinct TED Talk. of course, she's right, and it's so funny, the kindergarten lessons that have to be relearned in these controversies. But here's my question. Can you be a great man and sometimes a crappy man? Can you be a great woman and sometimes a crappy woman, right? We're all fallen. We're all sinners. And so my question is, can the 87 women who had the press conference on Friday...
87. Did you see that? It was a remarkable showing.
They all character witnesses for Brett Kavanaugh, hashtag I stand with Brett. Can those 87 women be describing the same man that his now two accusers are describing? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line. Let's hear from some of the women standing with Brett. First is Sarah Fagan, who got to know Brett when they worked as colleagues in the George W. Bush administration.
I first met Brett when we were both working in the early days of the Bush administration. All told, I worked closely with him for 4 years. No matter the hour or assignment, Brett was always the same. Thoughtful, detailed, and wise beyond his years. And whether you were male or female, white or black, an intern or the chief of staff, Brett was also always the same. Respectful, responsive, and available. His character was consistent. Simply put, Brett was a great colleague.
Megan McCaleb has known Brett Kavanaugh for 38 years.
They went to Turnabout together, right?
The first sock hop in grade school. You'll like this. McCaleb talks about him being a dedicated coach and volunteer.
The Brett Kavanaugh I know is a dedicated coach of young girls, not only in basketball, but in life lessons that come from playing team sports, yep. Winning with humility, losing with grace, determination, perseverance, grit. I know this because he coaches my niece, and his impact on her has been immeasurable. The Brett Kavanaugh I know regularly serves food to the homeless and tutors underprivileged children. The Brett Kavanaugh I know was there when one of my closest friends lost her husband to ALS. And he invited my friend's daughter to the father-daughter dance that first year and every year since. The Brett Kavanaugh I know was days away from his confirmation hearing when my father passed away. Brett skipped his preparation to attend my dad's funeral, went and prepared all afternoon for his hearing, and then asked if he could stop by my house that night to chat with my mom and my family.
Are you trying to make me cry?
I'm just saying, I mean, can this be the same guy who, once he's around a keg, becomes, you know, a groper and whips out his junk and pushes it in a girl's face as a prank, as the second accuser, as reported in the New Yorker, Deborah Ramirez, alleges happened at a party at Yale.
Yeah, in 1983-84 academic school year, they were at a dorm party, and she claims that he stuck, you know, whatever, in her face. This story is so thin and flimsy, and shame on Ronan Farrow for rushing to print this piece of crap, because that's what it is. Because people that were at that party, there's no cooperation. Nobody said, no, that didn't happen. This woman, Deborah Ramirez, who, by the way, in her Facebook picture has a Puerto Rican T-shirt on. I'm a little...
So that should be a Boricuans. Yeah, that should
Stop
be a check
it.
In her favor for you.
Well, whatever. No, I don't like it.
Okay.
But honestly, they said that she was a big drinker. And it took her 6 days meeting with her attorney, 6 days to, you know, go, what was it, memory relapse? They had to jog through her memory.
Well, sure to assess, reflect upon. Yeah,
come on,
I get it.
Days.
But
it's,
I mean, my point is,
jive.
She concedes, Ms. Ramirez concedes that she was drinking at the party and that she was a little groggy, but she nevertheless clearly recalls this happening. She recalls somebody yelling out, Brett Kavanaugh just did this to Deborah. So that's what she bases her allegation on, is that memory that has come back to her, I guess, or has recrystallized itself. I don't know. But can you get drunk at a party and do things you wouldn't normally do and behave in a boorish manner? Sure you can.
But again, he's categorically denying this and says, in fact, that this is part of a smear campaign.
That's what he said.
Because not one person, even Charles Grassley, information via CNN, the four people that were allegedly at the party with Blasey Ford, not one of them, not one, said that that had happened.
The fourth, a woman, Leland Kaiser, has come forward. She submitted a statement to the Senate Judiciary Committee saying, I have no recollection. I don't know Brett Kavanaugh. No recollection of ever being at a party with him. So she's not substantiating the claim of Blasey Ford. Interestingly, also,
yeah, who's her ex-husband?
Bob Beckel. I mean, this is
weird.
I know it's
like a soap opera skit.
But in addition to that, you have Kim Strassel over at Wall Street Journal sussing out the interference that the Washington Post was running for Blasey Ford, the way they were reporting it. They didn't report, even though they knew about Leland Kaiser not denial. Corroborating her story, refuting the story, or at least saying, I don't know Brett Kavanaugh. I've never been at a party with him, to my best of my recollection. Well, they just focused on the men that Blasey Ford identified in their initial reporting. They purposely spiked Leland Kaiser. Kim Strassel got an email from Mark Judge and has been able to put this together. So they're, you know,
because it
shaping,
didn't fit their agenda.
Right. They're shaping their coverage to support the accuser, even when there is potentially exculpatory witness testimony. I mean, it's remarkable what's going on.
And can I just get this off my chest for my liberal friends out there who all weekend kept saying, well, Anita Hill, the FBI investigated. The reason why the FBI investigated, because at the time, Clarence Thomas was an employee of the federal government on federal property when alleged sexual harassment happened to Anita Hill. So the FBI can't just come in and investigate state crimes in private homes that happened 36 years ago.
You could argue it's an extension of the background checking. And okay, fine. And that background, this could have been easily done as part of the background checking the FBI did prior to his confirmation hearing if Dianne Feinstein would have provided the information to Chuck Grassley or to anybody else such that the FBI could have looked into it back in July. Right. She didn't do that, which is why some have argued she should be censured. Even some on the left have said Dianne Feinstein didn't help anybody with the way that she did this and how she handled this was inappropriate to jackpot him in the 11th hour like this. And she's created much of this consternation around this allegation. Take a couple calls. Scott on the West Side, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, Dan and Amy. Thanks for taking my call. What the left is doing is taking normal teenage young adult male behavior, which I consider normal, and criminalizing it. Young men and teenagers, when they get drunk, they do these things, and so do women, by the way.
Yep.
It's normal behavior, and there's nothing wrong with it. And I wish that they would just have the vote today and get it over with.
Hi, Scott.
Thanks for the call, Scott. Appreciate it. I mean,
I'm with Scott. I wish they would just, you know what? You're not here. It's Monday. Sorry. And just vote it out of committee.
Well, just a point of order, not to be a prude, but...
Were you a perfect or hold
my or hold myself out as a paragon of moral virtue, because I'm clearly not. The next time I do that would be the first time I did that. Okay, so I'm not saying that, but...
Prude proft, yes, go on.
I wouldn't say it's normal behavior, what's alleged by these two women. I never...
Oh, I think it's so normal. Are you kidding me?
Well,
go to any high school, Oak Park, River Forest, Hersey High School, Wheeling. Everybody did that.
Everybody whips out their junk and weighs it in somebody's
face. I'm saying in high school when you get drunk and you start paying a little patty cake.
Everybody gets drunk and tries to rip the clothes off some girl.
Or you try to get under her shirt. I know this is so juvenile, but it's so true.
Maybe.
You try to get under the shirt, and that's what he's doing, trying to get under their shirt.
Maybe when you're up
at
Inspiration Point, and then there's some pecking, and it moves into heavy petting. And this sounds like an 80-year-old man describing male-female relations.
Just watch the movie Grease. I mean, John Travolta tried to do that to Olivia Newton-John, remember?
Yeah,
tried to get up on her shirt. She's like, Donnie, what are you doing, Donnie?
Right.
And she smacked him and got out, and then she started smoking and became one of the ladies.
Yeah, no, I thank
what
you
were they called?
For the plot summary of Grease.
just saying that it's a rite of passage. It's a high school thing.
I know, but
yeah, I'm sure you didn't do that at Bennett. You're too reedy.
Obviously
busy
not.
Reading War and Peace.
Sure, all of Tolstoy's works. Here's
so
the thing.
Exciting.
Here's what I would say. What is alleged by the two women, Miss Ford and Miss Ramirez? I don't think it's normal behavior. It shouldn't be excused. Does it happen? Is it disqualifying for the Supreme Court of the United States 35, 36 years ago? That's a different question. But I don't think you want to normalize that behavior, even though it happens and it shouldn't, stain you for the rest of your life.
If it did happen, it just shows, he's human.
Well, of course. Right. I mean, this is the larger question is, number one, did he do these things? And then number two, if he did do these things, is it disqualifying? That's the sort of question everybody's wrestling with. And most people, at least that I've talked to and from the show as well, but off the show, said, go back to sort of what Scott on the West Side said. Look, is that boorish behavior? Would I be, hit my son on the back of the head and ground him if I heard that he did something like that? Of course, it's not, you don't want to condone it. But does it end your career 35, 36 years after the fact? No.
Yeah, I agree.
And by the way, that's not conceding that I believe the two accusers over what Kavanaugh has said. I'm kind of want to hear and see a little bit more. And if I was Kavanaugh, by the way, these delays and Thursday
deadline stuff, extensions. Every time there was a deadline extension, her story lost so much credibility.
Well, here's what I would, I mean, if my reputation is being pilloried and I'm sort of handcuffed by the hostage negotiation going on between Chuck Grassley and Blase Ford's
attorneys,
in addition to now this second accuser, Deborah Ramirez. I mean, look, you guys either put me before that committee at a date and time certain, or I'm going to start holding press conferences because I'm not just going to sit silent, deny this, and not have a chance for the public to hear from me about the specifics of these allegations. And I'm not just going to let 87 women run interference for me. Not that they're running interference. Act as character witnesses for me like they did at that press conference. And then nobody is ever going to hear from me. People want to hear from me, and I want to be heard. I'd be chomping at the bit if I was him.
I'm
and
sure
I think
he's
he is
having some rough nights sleeping.
Anthony in Waukegan.
Hi, Dan and Amy. I love the show, and so don't take this the wrong way.
I won't. Okay.
But perhaps, Dan, especially you, maybe you need to walk back or apologize to your listeners for the way you went after Roy Moore several months ago.
No, I don't think I do. No, I don't think I do, actually. But thanks for the call, Anthony. And well,
This is not similar to
Roy Moore in almost any way.
You cannot compare the two at all.
Not even close. And by the way, much of my judgment on Roy Moore
was
based on what Roy Moore said and how Roy Moore answered questions and the details that Roy Moore did or didn't give and the oscillating Roy Moore did about dating young girls when he was in his 30s. And so not even close. No apology forthcoming from me with respect to Roy Moore. Hey, sorry to break the news to you. Bob in Montclair.
Hey, I think she needs more time to prepare her case, and along with the lady from Yale. Her supporters, Dr. Ford's supporters, are portraying her as something like Joan of Arc, and I believe it. Wouldn't you want more time to prepare after her first trial where she was tried and convicted, burned at the stake by a bunch of old white Christian men?
Yeah, okay.
I would.
Thanks for the call, Bob. By the way, Amy Chua, Tiger Mom. You know, she's the Yale Law professor who wrote the Tiger Mom book.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Was
she at that party, too?
No, but she's been accused by Yale law students who are papering over the entire campus with anti-Kavanaugh stuff of grooming female clerks for Judge Kavanaugh. Former students are saying all of Kavanaugh's clerks look like models.
Oh my God.
Like use Charlie Wilson there on the DC Court of Appeals. I mean, and Ed Chua has rejected this, but I mean, even somebody respected Yale law professor like Amy Chua, everybody gets cannibalized by the left unless you are in full froth. Tom in Deer Park.
Yeah, and I have a general question. Everything I read and see on the right, there's a lot of introspection. There's different takes. There's the willingness to hear the accuser. There's the pushing forward the notion of due process. So maybe I'm wrong here, but almost all the people I follow on the left, whether they're politicians, academia, they're in print or they're on cable, I don't see such introspection. What I see is unanimity of an agenda, and it all boils down to, well, we're mad about Merrick Garland, and we're going to do anything in our power to stop this, and doesn't matter if we destroy the processes that we have in our country for due process, and it doesn't matter if we destroy this man and his family. That's my take, and I was wondering what your thoughts are.
I think you're seeing it exactly right. Thanks, Tom.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. Don't miss David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Get your tickets today at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. So CNN did a little focus group with five Republican women from Florida, your friend Randy Kaye, Amy.
Yes.
And
she's your friend. Well,
she,
you know her too.
Yeah, she asked the question, who believes Kavanaugh? And all five ladies raised their hand. They believe Kavanaugh, and they explain why.
A show of hands, how many of you believe Judge Kavanaugh when he says this didn't happen?
I believe him.
I believe him.
How can we believe the word of a woman of something that happened 36 years ago when this guy has an impeccable reputation? There was nobody that has spoken ill will about him. Everyone that speaks about him, this guy's an altar boy, you know, a scout. He's, you know, because one woman made an allegation. Sorry, I don't buy it.
Well, it's now two women. This was before the Deborah Ramirez allegation, the New Yorker, out this weekend. But they believe him. And what if it did happen? You know, we don't really know. So what if it did happen? What would your response be?
But in the grand scheme of things, my goodness, there was no intercourse. There was maybe a touch.
Right.
Can we really? 36 years later, she's still stuck on that? Had it happen?
I mean, we're talking about a 15-year-old girl, which I respect. You know, I'm a woman. I respect. And we're talking about a 17-year-old boy in high school with testosterone running high. Tell me what boy hasn't done this in high school. Please, I would like to know.
Does something that allegedly happened some 30-plus years ago matter today?
You can't judge the character of a man based on what he did at 17.
And I would hate to think that 30, 40 years later, somebody's going to destroy your life because somewhere, at some party, it's not right, but maybe you touched somebody the way you were not supposed to.
And who brought the alcohol for these kids?
As women, though, do you have some sympathy for her, for what she's going through?
No, I have no sympathy. And perhaps maybe she, at that moment she liked him, and maybe he didn't pay attention to her afterwards, and he went out with another girl, and she got bitter, or whatever the situation is. They're kids.
All right.
That's a little aggressive, but...
Let's...
I understand with the level of sympathy. I have none.
All right.
For her.
Let's
and
see.
That sounds awful, but if she was a real victim... She'd be already in D.C. today testifying.
Let's see if there's any empathy to be found for Miss Blase Ford and Miss Ramirez from our friends, the first ladies of punditry. They are Diamond and Silk, host of The Viewer's View. Diamond and Silk, thanks so much for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having us.
All right. So what do you ladies have to say about the ladies defending Brett Kavanaugh and the two ladies accusing him?
First of all, it's two idiots too, because one came out last night. You know, okay, so if you don't know when it happened, where it happened, how it happened, then your story don't sound right. It doesn't sound credible to us, okay? And then for everyone to take in to Judge Kavanaugh while he's a man, when all of this here allegedly happened or was supposed to happen while he was a teenage boy, when his prefrontal cortex wasn't developed, mm-hmm. when he was not a grown man, it is unbeknownst to me. I was like, I am just taken aback by it. Not only that, these teenagers, what did they do back in the day? They used to drink, running around half-naked and doing all kinds of things. We've all been teenagers before.
That's right.
Now, anybody that has been abused, that has truly been abused, you will never forget the place, the when, the mm-hmm. where, the how. You will never, ever, 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 I promise you, you will never forget that, okay? But her story sounded a little shady. Now, this other girl that came out, I think she claimed that he exposed himself. Well, if he exposed himself, what did she expose?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I get so tired of women running around here like they saints. Because let me tell you something, Diamond and Silk have been out and we've paid attention, and there's a lot of these women are loose and they throw themselves at these men, and we've seen it.
That's
now,
right.
Today is Kavanaugh. Tomorrow it can be your brother, your father, your cousin. And if I was everybody, I don't care what side of the aisle you are, you need to be paying attention to how the left is trying to run this country, how they can just accuse you of something and make it true. You need to make sure you vote right so that you won't get caught up in this left foolishness.
Now, are you ladies going to be open-minded, though, when Blasey Ford finally comes, hopefully it comes to Washington and tells her story.
I am going to be open-minded, but I'm also going to be open to the fact that this these allegations, she's making these claims when they were teenagers.
Right.
When do he have a when do people have a chance to redeem themselves? Just think about that, y'all. Think about if somebody went back in your past and say, oh, well, when you was 13 years old, this happened. Mm-hmm. See, he has such an impeccable record. You can't find nothing about him when he's a grown man. So you go back to when he's a teenager. And then if you got a story to tell, tell your story. Why are you hiring lawyers and got all of these team of people? For what? Why didn't you go to the police? Why
didn't
you send a letter to Feinstein? Who the heck is Feinstein? She ain't nothing but a senator. She's not the authorities. She's not the police. And another thing, you can't make no commands and demands on how you want to testify and how you want to do this. When you take it to the police, they make the decisions on what goes down. The
That's
courts
right.
make the decision on what goes down. Silk, I'm sorry. I feel like you want to
No, go
something.
Ahead. Uh-uh. You got this. Go
okay.
ahead.
Okay. I mean, I'm just, it's just, I'm so appalled by it, you all.
Mm-hmm.
I am appalled by what I see going on. And I'm telling you, this is the left. This is how they want to do. They took that Me Too movement. They politicized it. And now they're using it as a weapon to try to take people down, to try to destroy this man's credibility. And guess what? I don't care if Kavanaugh passed tomorrow. It's going to always be a stain on him that it was this alleged abuse allegation. And that's what's so sad. I will never vote for another Democrat. Everybody need to vote Republican, because if you don't, this is the trajectory that our country is going to go in. You're going to see people just falling, just being taken down, livelihoods destroyed over allegations. What did the woman do?
That's right.
What did the woman do? Were you innocent? What did you do? If something happened 30 years ago, you can stand in front of anybody and tell it if you want to get it off your chest. But when I see you hiring teams of leaders, when I see you hiring lawyers, when I see you sending a letter to the senator and not sending it to the police, oh, I have a problem with that. Something ain't right about this. It's all political, and everybody know it.
Now, on the other side, concurrent to the Kavanaugh confirmation hearing and this controversy, of course, is Keith Ellison, Democrat congressman, candidate for attorney general in Minnesota, also the deputy chairman of the DNC, and two women accusing him of, well, of abuse, one an ex-girlfriend, and she's really doubling down. She gave an interview recently with the CBS affiliate there, providing detail about a meeting they had where Ellison was trying to sort of soft pedal her and have her stop tweeting about the Me Too movement and about abuse because he was afraid she was going to make allegations against him. That's her characterization of it. How do you react to the two women making allegations against Keith Ellison and his response?
Well, here's the deal. This is what I don't understand. These two women been making these allegations, but it's nothing from the left. You hear nothing from the left. You see what the hypocrisy, how the hypocrisy look like? And we've even reached out to one of the girls because we wanted to have her on a show so that she can discuss and talk about her story, because she said the Democrats have ostracized her and won't give her a chance to talk about it. You know, it's a clear double standard.
Well, to Karen
if this girl have proof, then we have to look at her proof. But you got this other girl from 30 years. She don't have no proof. She can't find no witness. People wondering what she talking about. It's something strange going on.
And let's not forget about Juanita Broderick. She'll be on our show tonight, by the way.
Oh, good.
But let's not forget about her. Why don't the left want to hear her story?
And the Me Too movement.
Mm-hmm.
Why are they leaving her out? You know, listen, I take abuse allegations very serious. I take abuse serious, okay? I take that very serious. But what I don't like, you don't take something like that and politicize it and use that as a weapon and try to take people down. You know,
That's
this
right.
man, his reputation is going to be ruined.
Right.
And shame on the Senate. Shame on people sitting up there on that committee. They should have confirmed him, and he should have been confirmed today.
That's right. And
stop playing the left game.
Shame on the Republicans for allowing this. And I say that because the Democrats, this is their tactics.
Mm-hmm.
They've been doing this here for years.
Right.
And the Republicans continue to fall in the dookie of it.
That's right.
What they need to do is wake up and say, we're not falling for this anymore. We're not falling for your okey-doke. What we're going to do is go ahead and confirm Kavanaugh and then let the chips fall where they may. Because if you didn't have enough sense to bring up this allegations and stuff during his hearing, why are you going to wait till after his hearing doing the confirmation part?
Right. Another thing, you know what? This is, like you said, Sue, this is what the Democrats do. This is a page out of their playbook.
That's right.
When they can't play the race card, now they play the sex card. Mm-hmm. This always happened. And guess what? I have to commend them because at least they stick together. It's time for Republicans to stick together like that. Stick together like that and confirm Kavanaugh and stop this foolishness.
That's right. And Feinstein, she need to be talking about her driver of 20 years who was a Chinese spy. Nobody is talking about that. Nobody. How he quietly retired while getting paid a government pension from taxpayer dollars. Nobody want to talk about that, but we want to talk about something that happened 36 years ago when somebody was a teenager.
And their prefrontal cortex was not developed. If you don't know what your prefrontal cortex is, that tells you what you should, what's right and what's wrong and what you really know is right or wrong. And that don't develop until you about, what, 24, 25?
That's right.
Oh, please.
And, that's why our movie is coming out, Dummycrats. Dummycrats the movie, because it's a lot of dumb people sitting over there on the Democrat side that played these doggone games. So go to Dummycrats the movie. It's premiering October the 15th. You can get your tickets now and see what theaters they're playing at, because we want to see your face in the place on that particular night.
We need some laughs because I'm just so irritated by it all.
All right, so, ladies. Bill Cosby is going to court today for a two-day sentencing hearing. He's the first, you know, person that could spend time in jail during this Me Too era. What are your thoughts on him, and how much time do you think, if any, he should spend in jail?
Oh, well, first of all, the only thing that I saw that Bill Cosby was guilty of was cheating on his wife, Camille. Okay, that's just my honest opinion about that. However, remember all the women you had coming out. Some of the women lied. They got on stand and said that they finally admitted that they lied, but they were able to go home and sleep in their somber beds and nothing ever happened to them. You know what I wish? I wish that when a woman make an allegation and it turns out to be a lie, they give her just as much time as the person that they accuse of abusing them. That's number one. Number two is that Bill Cosby paid this woman off. Mm-hmm. So I think she should be able to give him his money back. Mm-hmm. Number three, what got Bill Cosby in trouble is when he said that he was giving out those Quaaludes.
Right,
but do you know that's what they used to pop back in the day? He didn't know. He didn't only give people Quaaludes. It was a lot more other of them giving people of girls Quaaludes. See, you have to understand, we can't judge what happened back then like it is today. Mm-hmm. It's a totally different ball game back then. Back then, them drug addicts, they popped them pills, they gave it to each other.
Yes.
They had these big old wild parties. That's what they did back then. Today, that's unacceptable. And what we're trying to do is go back then and judge it like it is today. And that's what got everybody up in a fickle. Because at the end of the day, everybody can go to jail for something.
Well,
a lot of people done a lot of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I don't. The Cosby thing seems like there's a lot of
date raping going on.
A lot of women telling the same story of being drugged.
Would they consider that as raping today?
Yeah, that's right.
I heard Whoopi on The View say, well, she used to pop them. Okay?
Well,
listen, it is what it is.
People give stats for drugs. That's what those ladies was doing back then, and they still do it today.
Well,
they give up their behinds to have sex so that they can take drugs.
Okay.
That was the thing of the norm back then. We can't make it the thing of the norm right now.
Right.
And you're judging it right now as if it happened right now when it happened way back when.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay.
But Bill Cosby, look, if he did the crime, he's going to have to do the time is what I got to say.
Yeah.
He admitted it. I think they had him on tape where he admitted to giving this woman this here drug.
But she got paid off.
Well, even if she got paid off, he admitted it. That's what got him in trouble. See, if you bring for proof, then she brought for proof. They had it to recording where he testified to or said that he gave this woman, allegedly gave her this here particular
But just
deal.
Because he gave it to her does not mean that he raped her intentionally.
Well,
that was the thing of the norm back then.
But because of the Me Too era, they can take this Me Too era and they can take it and use it as a weapon,
right.
That's what they've done.
All right. I'm done relitigating the Cosby thing for now.
Don't get us started.
No, I know. We did it.
People have a personal opinion, and the one thing is we're not robotic talking heads. We truth tellers, and we're going to tell the truth on how we see it.
I concede that point. Diamond and Silk, they are Trump supporters, hosts of The Viewer's View, And the movie Dummycrats coming out, what, October 12th, did you say?
October 15th. You go to dummycrats.com to get your tickets.
Get your tickets, baby. All right, Diamond and Soak, thanks for joining us as always. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Take care.
And they joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
You've made the switch, and it feels so good. You've switched to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy. Our friend Bob Woodson, friend of the show, Woodson Center, formerly Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, civil rights leader, and great proponent of minority entrepreneurship, thus the Center for Neighborhood Enterprise, which morphed into the Woodson Center. Just a interesting, accomplished guy. He's writes in The Hill, and we'll get to this because it'd be interesting to hear other people's stories as well. I appreciate him having the openness to share his stories. I've had experience in it on both sides of the issues, talking about sexual harassment and abuse. Perhaps some of the steps taken in my situation could serve as a guide as our country navigates this new age of political theater in the Me Too movement. He recounts one story where he's in the late 1970s. He's working as a program director for a major nonprofit in New York City, supervising a small staff. One woman, one of the temporary secretaries, came to him one morning. One woman who was a temporary secretary came to him. She sat down. She began to weep uncontrollably. She explained that for 5 or 6 months she had been having an affair with one of the men in the office. She said, Woodson recounts, as a Muslim and a single mother, sleeping with a married man was weighing on her conscience. She told him she wanted to end the relationship. He responded with anger, threatening to withhold her pay and make it difficult to continue to work in the organization. So I believed her. I helped her make arrangements to preserve her employment in a position away from the individual she said was threatening her. She was not asking that somebody be fired, but rather that she be able to maintain her employment when it had been threatened by a person with a personal and possibly violent grudge. So that's one example. The other example he gives is on the receiving end. He's working at a different position in D.C., and he's invited to meet new staff. He invited new staff to accompany him to a congressional reception on the Hill to meet some congressional staff with whom they'd be working. At the end of the evening, I drove the young woman to retrieve her car. I drove a young woman in the office to retrieve her car near the office. She invited me to join her for a drink at her apartment. I declined, noting it was late and I had to get home. When I got home, I shared the young woman's offer with my wife and the next day with the young male staffer so he'd be aware as he interacted with this young woman. About 6 months later, I terminated her because of poor performance, but released her under circumstances that would allow her to collect unemployment. Within 2 weeks, my doubts and misgivings about the young woman were realized. The day after I terminated her, I arrived at work and was told to report to the office of the president, where I was greeted by our general counsel. They told me the young lady in question claimed she was let go because of her refusal to submit to my sexual advances.
Oh.
Both men told me they wanted to reach an out-of-court settlement with her. I told both of them that under no circumstances would I agree to this arrangement because she was lying. When they told her lawyer the decision, we never heard from them again. Woodson concludes, in my many years on this earth, he's in his 80s, I've witnessed, or about 80, I've witnessed women being treated as objects by their male coworkers and supervisors.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to believe women when they come forward with stories of harassment and assault or rape in the workplace. However, because of my experience as a wrongly accused party, I'm equally as likely to believe men when they claim innocence when accused of heinous acts. Both men and women are capable of leveling false but damaging allegations. That's a good perspective, a little wisdom from one of our elders there, Bob Woodson, as we watch the hysteria unfold today and for the rest of the week, and who knows how much longer in the Kavanaugh matter. All right, switching gears, but I want to get back to that and get people's perspectives on what Woodson had to say, their own professional lives. It's always interesting. It certainly informs people's views on what they're witnessing. Wednesday, this coming Wednesday at 5:30 p.m., our friend Eric Eggers, who's the research director at the Government Accountability Institute, will be at the Heartland Institute. Heartland.org is where you can get more details on Eric's appearance, at which I'm sure he will talk about his book, Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election. Eric, thanks for joining us again. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much. And it's an interesting parallel between, and you know, your discussion earlier, and it's such an important issue, but in many ways, right, the hysteria that's engulfed any claim of sexual harassment or Me Too, I think there's oddly a parallel with, you know, what I write about in my book about voter fraud, because any effort, and I document this, to try to secure elections or try to prevent voter fraud from occurring are almost always met with this hysteric cry of racism or racial oppression. And so I do think, you know, just in both situations, I think it's important that you have an objective and dispassionate examination of what the actual facts, and that's obviously what I hope to do in the book and what I hope to talk about on Wednesday.
You mean like, and when you talk about hysteria and cries of racism, you're talking specifically about voter ID laws mainly?
Well, there's that, but it's not just that. I think last time we spoke about this fallacy that requiring an ID is somehow racist, even though numerous states have actually seen increases in minority participation after they've implemented voter ID laws. But, you know, the real truth about voter fraud is that a lot of what I think you and I and your listeners would consider to be voter fraud is actually legal. And then what happens is, and there's a great example of this that occurred in South Florida, you had this sort of triumvirate of an elected local official and a state rep and a state senator, and they all were using this same political operative who was going out and filling out absentee ballot request forms on behalf of Haitian residents. Some people were blind, some people were elderly. And then he would then go out and harvest those same ballots. And the supervisor of election would flag it and say, hey, look, this is a problem. All these signatures are the same. Sometimes they're blank, but the law mandated that she sent out the absentee ballot request forms. Long story short, the sheriffs would actually end up investigating and found clear evidence of voter fraud. But the state senator, the state attorney, who's a former Democratic official, refused to prosecute. And when the newspaper would follow up and say, hey, what happened? There's clear evidence of voter fraud, because they were all of Haitian descent, to a man, every single one of them turned it into a racial issue. So it wasn't about the facts where you had forged signatures or, you know, what appeared to be violations of election law behavior. But it was, in fact, well, it became about the ethnic minority of the people that were trying to get elected. So that's an example of, I think, oftentimes racial hues distort an objective analysis of what's actually occurring on the ground.
Well, in regards to our upcoming midterms, do you think voter fraud is going to take down Peter Raskin and Randy Holcren?
I mean, I think they're going to try, right? There's certainly no evidence to suggest that the elections are more secure, or as secure as they need to be. I think every day I see new stories. There's a story in New Jersey about a woman admitting that she was paying $50 to get people's votes. You've seen people hack into election systems. We've got a candidate who's running for governor here in Florida who brags about his 15-year relationship with George Soros. And I think, you know, we've got a documented network and relationship between George Soros and Tom Perez that I think has infiltrated party machinery and ballot races in every corner of the country. And I think Illinois and Chicago is no different. So I think you guys, you know, thankfully there's people like you that are monitoring it and talking about it. I spoke to a group of election law attorneys last month, and they said, listen, we're on the ground fighting this, but it's not easy. And a number of them were actually former prosecutors or judges that said, listen, I've seen these cases, but my hands are tied either because the law doesn't really allow me to do much, or because even if the law does allow me, I have such limited resources in my office. If I'm a prosecutor, what am I going after? Somebody that's, you know, committing voter fraud or somebody that's committing physical assault, right? So, many people would agree that voter fraud is the easiest crime to commit and get away with, and that's just a sad reality.
Well, it's funny because, not funny, ha-ha funny, but funny ironic, because last week we had a leading Democrat in St. Clair County at a rally for Democrats down there in the Metro East by St. Louis, where you've got another competitive congressional race, Mike Boss reelection, say to the assembled at this rally, you know, get out there and, the typical kind of vote early, vote often, a tongue in cheek, but it wasn't tongue in cheek. He said, do whatever you have to do. And, you know, I shouldn't say this, but I'm not even kidding about it. I mean, straight well, face. It wasn't a punchline.
It wasn't a punchline. It's a rallying cry. And that's not uncommon these days. And I think, you know, what you're realizing, look at what's happening with Kavanaugh now, right? I mean, you led in with some of the undercurrents, and maybe that's a tactic that's being employed strategically by Democrats and how to prevent this. But that's what's on the ballot, right? I mean, what you're seeing occurring, and a lot of people have raised questions about, you know, is this ethical, the way that they're sort of maybe using this lady and the way they sat on this claim, and they're just doing whatever they can to scuttle the nomination. But I think we knew that would occur, right? I mean, what's on the ballot is the blocking of a Supreme Court nominee, the impeachment of the president, the abolishment of ICE, and the entire laundry list of progressive agenda items that I think we're seeing all over the country. So, and yeah, these people have, I think, this perception of that they have the moral authority because this guy, Donald Trump, is clearly evil, right? He's clearly doesn't respect women, doesn't respect immigrants. He is the antithesis of all the progressive values. So in their opinion, anything that they can do is warranted and justified as long as it results in the impeachment of Donald Trump and the blocking of the Supreme Court nominee. I think that's what you're seeing in Kavanaugh now is what you're going to see at the ballot box.
What at the ballot box, do you think social media is also one of the referenda on the November 6th ballot? You've got word that an executive order is being drafted to look at social media giants in terms of their content, how they manage content or other people's content, which ultimately is their content. We've seen a lot of discussion over the last several weeks, including the appearance of executives from the big companies before members of Congress, and some suggestion by Mark Stein and others that we're so worried about Russia when it's Twitter, Facebook, and Google that are going to have a much more manipulative effect on our electoral outcomes.
Well, that's an excellent point. I don't know if you did this on purpose, but I'm actually the producer on a film that debuted in New York and D.C. last week and will be coming to Amazon and iTunes soon. And I'll be speaking about this at the Heartland Institute on Wednesday as well. But the film's called The Creepy Line, and it's a documentary about Google and Facebook and how much power they have over the American public to manipulate us in an unsuspecting way. And one of the things that we talk about in that film is the power that Google and Facebook both could have in terms of swaying elections. Facebook, if they, you know, modify what people see in terms of their newsfeed, and or they just send out, get out the vote reminders, specifically only the Democrats. You know, Google, and there's a psychologist whose work we feature in the film named Robert Epstein, and he's documented the way in which you can manipulate the way search results come back, or even the autocomplete box, and that can impact some voting demographics up to 80%. Actually, the voting demographic that's most susceptible to manipulation is moderate Republicans. So you're absolutely right, and I think that's a very real problem. I mean, the good news for us is I have it on good authority that that film, which again was screened in D.C. last week, has caught the attention of some people in the White House, and you know, we're hopeful that people are taking a look at that. But you're right. I mean, that's only going to motivate what's clearly a reliable leftist bloc in terms of the social media titans to try to make sure that they have a desired outcome in November, 100%.
He is Eric Eggers, Research Director at the Government Accountability Institute. The book, Fraud, How the Left Plans to Steal the Next Election, and the movie, The Creepy Line, that you just heard, will be coming out on Amazon. He'll be at the Heartland Institute this Wednesday evening, 5:30 p.m., heartland.org for all of the details. Eric, thanks so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thanks so much, guys.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, you know, reports are that Trump and the difference of opinion over Trump is breaking up marriages. Well, Dr. Paul Gosar, who is a dentist and a congressman from Arizona, one of the more conservative areas in Arizona, he's breaking up the family. This is just a remarkable ad. It's difficult to imagine a more brutal ad this cycle than this. Paul Gosar comes from a big family, a lot of siblings. And because of some comments he made about George Soros, which were regrettable.
Yeah,
in my estimation.
That was in reference to Charlottesville.
But about Soros specifically being like a Nazi collaborator, which is a a rumor that really has no basis in truth. You don't need to overstate the case against George Soros. But Gosar did, and his family demanded he apologize.
Yeah, they didn't like that.
So much so that they've cut a spot for his opponent.
None of this is pleasant for any of us.
It's horrible to have to do this.
To speak up against my brother, it brings sadness to me.
This isn't just about Paul. This is about their family.
I think my brother has traded a lot of the values we had at our kitchen table.
I couldn't be quiet any longer, nor should any of us be.
We got to stand up for our good name. This is not who we are.
It's intervention time. And intervention time means that you go to vote, and you go to vote Paul out. My name is Tim Gosar.
My name is Jennifer Gosar.
Gaston Gosar.
Joan Gosar.
Grace Gosar.
David Gosar.
Paul Gosar is my brother.
My brother.
My brother. And I endorse Dr. Brill.
Dr. Brill.
Dr. Brill.
And I wholeheartedly endorse Dr. David Brill for Congress.
Ouch.
I'm Dr. David Brill, and I approve this message.
I bet you did.
Well, they said that his siblings are all disgruntled Hillary supporters, and Mama Gosar didn't take too kindly to what her siblings did. She put out a statement saying she's shocked and crushed. I share the same philosophy and policies that Paul does. He's done a hell of a job for Arizona, and they love him. And he tweeted back, the best tweet I've ever heard. I always knew I was Mom's favorite.
That's awesome. That's a great zinger right back. That is, I mean, that is pitch perfect.
See you at Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Oh, boy. That's, boy.
That's fantastic.
Put away the sharp objects. Here's the thing. Even though what Gosar said about Soros was regrettable, the idea that would be the cause of all of your siblings breaking bad on you like that in such a public way, that really speaks poorly of them. And I wonder if this doesn't ultimately redound to Gosar's benefit.
But also, too, none of them live in Arizona, so they're not constituents anyway, okay?
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. See Sheriff David Clark and James O'Keefe at Freedom Summit 2018. Tickets on sale now at freedomsummitchicago.com.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and we've got to update the Ronan Farrow story. This Deborah Ramirez, a second accuser of Brett Kavanaugh, broke over the weekend. She is 53, attended Yale with Kavanaugh, and accuses him reluctantly after being approached by reporters and after some careful assessing of her memories. This according to Ronan Farrow's piece. Ramirez was said she felt confident enough that she remembers Kavanaugh exposing himself to her at a drunken dorm party 35 years ago.
And not only reporters seeking her out, Ronan Farrow claims that Senate Democrats were seeking her out.
She says that at first she wasn't sure this was Kavanaugh when you first came to her last week. And then you write, after 6 days of carefully assessing her memories and consulting with her attorney, she did become confident that it was him. You know, a lot of people...
And George, I would say that that's extremely typical of these stories. When you're dealing with trauma, alcohol, many years in between, I think that the more cautious witnesses that I've dealt with in cases like this very frequently say, I want to take time to decide. I want to talk to other people involved. I want to search myself and make sure that I can affirmatively stand by these claims in the face of what she knew would be a crucible of partisan pushback, which is what she's receiving now.
Why did she come forward?
She came forward because Senate Democrats began looking at this claim. She did not flag this for those Democrats. This came to her, to the attention of people on the Hill independently, and it's really cornered her into an awkward position. That's why she took time to think about this carefully. You know, she said point blank, I don't want to ruin anyone's life, but she feels this is a serious claim. You know, she considers her own memories credible, and she felt it was important that she tell her story before others did without her consent.
So the same questions are operative here that are operative with the Blase Ford allegations, which is, one, is it credible? And two, even if it's true, is it disqualifying for Kavanaugh's confirmation? 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line, 646-36-DA, turnkey.pro text line.
But the problem with this flimsy rush-to-print story about the second accuser is the four people that she mentioned, all of them denied what happened.
If there is no eyewitness confirmation, if no one can definitively say Brett Kavanaugh was there other than Debbie Ramirez, why did you feel so comfortable running with this story?
Two reasons. The first is there is a strong evidentiary basis. Her claim is corroborated, as you said, to an extent that is not always possible by people who did not know her, have not interacted with her, and yet independently recounted the same fact pattern. Some of those people are on the record in this story, so I'd point you to the piece. The other is, I think, the same reason that she decided to speak, John, which is this is a story that is out there on the Hill. It is being investigated. It is a matter of news whether she tells her own version of this story or not. That put her in an exceptionally difficult position. And I think, you know, the public deserved to hear her version of this story because it will be a source of tremendous conflict on the Hill in the coming days.
From Ronan Farrow's piece, one of the male classmates who Ramirez said egged on Kavanaugh denied any memory of the party. I don't think Brett would flash himself to Debbie or anyone for that matter. Two of the male classmates who Ramirez alleged were involved in the incident, the wife of a third male student said she was involved, and three other classmates who are named disputed Ramirez's account of events. We were the people closest to Kavanaugh during his first year at Yale. He was roommate to some of us. We spent a great deal of time with him, including in the dorm where this incident allegedly occurred. Some of us were also friends with Ramirez during that time and her time at Yale. We can say with confidence that if the incident Debbie alleges ever occurred, we would have seen or heard about it, and we did not.
Her best friend, who says she knew everything about Ramirez in college, said she never mentioned a word of this.
So another
Democratic plant?
So how do you sift through this, though, for the purposes of adjudicating the matter of his confirmation? That you have sort of the dynamic here, at least in its early stage, that you've had with the Blase A. Ford allegations, which is the people that are supposed to corroborate the story all refute the story, or certainly they cannot confirm the story, in part because, you know, it happened 35 years ago. And it was probably not particularly consequential, at least for the alleged witnesses as compared to the accusers, or certainly Kavanaugh, who has denied this allegation just as he denied Blase A. Ford's. So how do you adjudicate the matter? The Amish texter is calling us from the secret tin can with the string that we have set up for him solely.
Yeah. Yes. Reluctantly. This is very sad, but after searching my memory, I do have to come forward as a third accuser. It was shortly after Rumspringa. I was over in Pennsylvania at Yoder's Amish Cooking, and it was in Lancaster. And I believe he was there with his fraternity brothers on a walkout to Penn State. And Amy, I think you know how these fraternity brothers act. I think you know what the eyes mean. And they were leering at the muffins. And they mentioned comments about the Amish buns and even our pies. And then later on in the bathroom, it was just me and Kavanaugh. I've searched my memory, as best of my recollection. Yeah. I'm standing at the urinal. He leans over. Yes, he leaned over and looked. And then he said it. He said, "I could see why you Amish are good at wood." Now, is that a qualifying
thing in the
eye of the Democrats, or is that disqualifying?
That's
Maybe
something
you should
we'll
call
have.
Ronan Farrow.
We will.
But
have.
By the way, the reason why Blasey Crazy cannot get out there is I'm taking her in the buggy. She wanted to go
a
slow, safe route by buggy, and we're going to arrive there. Is it Thursday? Yeah, Thursday.
I hope you'll be compensated by the federal government for your transport. Thank you, Amish Texter. Appreciate that. Thank you for treating this with the seriousness it merits.
It's a great story.
Yes.
Don't let the facts get in the way of a good story.
Charlotte in Arlington Heights.
Hi. How many times were we told with President Bill Clinton it really didn't matter about his private life, you know, as long as he could do the job? Sex with an intern in the Oval Office, and Juanita Broderick and Kathleen Willey sure spoke out to friends and coworkers, but they were pretty much ignored.
Right, and so what should we do here?
Make him a judge on a justice of the Supreme Court. They'll find three more people tomorrow.
Thanks for the call, Charlotte. Interestingly, there's this other piece of it. The narrative the left wants to tell about Republicans, about conservatives. White men, right? Over and over again. White men on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
Yeah, there are 11 Republicans. They're going to question her.
Sophia Nelson, writing in the Daily Beast, who claims she's a moderate Republican. I'd like to see her voting card, or, you know, with her voting history. But, okay. She writes this in calling for Kavanaugh to withdraw his nomination. I think our nation is losing. I think we've gone down a political rabbit hole that we may never return from. We hate our opponents now. We don't just disagree. We can't lose agreeably. We must destroy their reputation. We must dig up dirt. We must hurt their families and put them in danger even just to prove that we are right. This is not healthy for democracy. This is not good for a nation that once upon a time was made of optimists. Yeah, okay. And then so help me work the logic to this. America has fallen. Judge Kavanaugh may not have been your cup of tea or mine. For me, and then she goes on to say, or he could end up being another Lewis Powell or Sandra Day or Anthony Kennedy. Doubtful, but okay. She goes on to say, for me, Kavanaugh is too damaged in the eye of at least many Americans in a way no Supreme Court nominee has been, including Clarence Thomas. This is a new day, but the GOP seems stuck in the past century. Their side of the Senate Judiciary Committee has never had a woman sit on it in the 202-year history. The Democrats have had four of them on the committee today, as if that means anything. The GOP is the old white angry boys club. They don't get it. The logic of that sort of escapes me. You're talking about how the nation is losing and we're going down this dark road from which we may never return. And then you're saying, and so we should concede the point, I guess is her argument. By having Kavanaugh withdraw, that's an odd argument. In addition to the statement about the old white angry boys club that the GOP allegedly is. Boy, it's hardly that, isn't it? Is that what it is? Because it seems to me all the hate is coming from the left. That's where the real hate is. And by the way, Sophia Nelson's just describing it three paragraphs above where she calls the GOP the old white angry boys club. It's so... so cliched, isn't it?
It's old.
So banal. So unthinking. It's a recitation of a DNC talking point. In point of fact, I would refer Miss Nelson and everybody else to the wisdom of Shelby Steele, who writes over the weekend explaining why the left is consumed with hate. For many of the left, a hateful anti-Americanism has become a self-congratulatory lifestyle. Uses the Andrew Cuomo, America was never that great, as an example. For other leftists, hate is a license. Conservative speakers can be shouted down, even assaulted on campuses. Republican officials can be harassed in restaurants. How did the American left conceive to bring more compassion and justice to the world become given to hate? It began in the 60s, when America finally accepted slavery and segregation were profound moral failings. That changed America forever. It imposed a new moral imperative. America would have to show itself redeemed in these immoralities, in order to stand as a legitimate democracy. The genius of the left in the 60s was to perceive the new moral imperative and then to identify with it. Thus, the labor of redeeming the nation from its immoral past would fall on the left. This is how the left put itself in charge of America's moral legitimacy. The left, not the right, would set the terms of this legitimacy and deliver from America from shame to decency. And this has provided the left with enormous political and cultural power, not to mention more than $22 trillion in government spending towards these ends. Steele goes on to note that this amounted to a formula for power. The greater the menace to the nation's moral legitimacy, the more the power redounded to the left. Here's the problem. Most of these menaces are gone. And so you have to create new ones. For example, this is Shelby Steele's writing. White on black shootings evoke America's history of racism and so carry an iconic payload of menace. Witness Michael Brown in Ferguson. Black on black shootings carry no such payload, although they are truly menacing to the black community. They evoke only despair. And the left gets power from fighting white evil, not black despair. The left gets power from fighting white evil, not black despair. Hatred is a transformative power. It can make the innocuous into the menacing. For King, hatred was not necessary as a means to power. The actual details of oppression were enough. Power came to him because he rejected hate as a method of resisting menace. He called on blacks not to be defined by what menaced them. Today, because menace provides moral empowerment, blacks and their ostensible allies indulge in it. The menace of black victimization becomes the unarguable truth of the black identity, and here we are again, forever victims. And Steele sort of signals an optimistic note, basically saying, look, you're inventing a boogeyman. You're inventing things that don't actually exist. And so for the American left today, the indulgence in hate is a death rattle, that ultimately this won't work out for them, not in the medium term. But in the short term, can it derail a nominee for the Supreme Court? Perhaps. Daniel in Algonquin.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. The proof for Kavanaugh for me is that nobody wants her to testify. Her lawyers don't believe her. They don't want her to testify. None of the Democrats on the committee want to testify, want to put it off as far as possible, because they don't believe her. Nobody believes her.
Well, thanks for the call, Daniel. I'm not so sure about that, or whether they believe her or not. I would say whether she's telling the truth or not is irrelevant to them. It's the ends that's relevant, and that's it. Will and Skokie.
Good morning. Yeah, the thing we have to remember here is identity politics is in the final analysis the destroyer of democracy. You hear all the Democrats always talking about democracy, how Trump's ruining our democracy. You know, they're ruining it. They're parsing the electorate into ever smaller and smaller groups and labeling them as victims. And we wind up with democracy being destroyed, and then the people who are victims somehow have more rights and more calls because of their oppression to be heard. And we wind up with democracy, full democracy, which is, in the essence, mob rule. Thank you.
Thanks, Will.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.